Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Hercules and the Space Gods, I'm proud to bring you the Urantia book with Nick Curto. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you, sir?
Oh, never better, Hercules. What a beautiful day we had here in Manhattan.
Yes.
It couldn't have been any nicer. And I took a guided tour by an amazing person who knows all the history of the Lower East Side. And we saw where the beginnings of theater in America, where the Yiddish theater, where vaudeville was done, and all the incredible people from television and movies who made their start on the Lower East Side. It was quite an eye-opening experience.
It sounds wonderful. And was this a part of a program or was this a private tour?
I have a dear friend who's in real estate, and one of the things he does is he sponsors these walking 2-hour guided tours of various sections of all the boroughs of New York City. And I've been doing this with him. There's usually about 40 or 50 people that do these walking tours, and Joyce Gold, who I really want to have on my program soon, knows everything about the history, everything about the areas. So she was phenomenal, and you just get so much information in 2 hours. It's quite something.
I can't wait to listen to all she has to share on your show.
It's coming right up. It will be certainly, I believe, this year, before the year ends. And she's spectacular. You will love her.
I'm sure I will. You are excellent in your choice of guests. And I'm looking forward to your conversation today with Doreen Haim.
Excellent. Okay. Well, then let's go. We'll begin. And again, to all of our listeners out there, a very, very warm welcome to Nick Curto Presents the Urantia Book, and this is a live 60-minute podcast. I'm Nick Curto, the host. For me, the Urantia Book has been a truly expansive, breathtaking experience to explore this inspiring, eye-opening, mind-expanding, and truly loving masterwork, which is called The Fifth Epical Revelation. The text introduces the word Urantia, U-R-A-N-T-I-A, as the name of our planet Earth. That's how they refer to our planet, and states that its intent is to present enlarged concepts and advanced truth. And boy, does it. It just makes my head spin what's in this book. It unites religion, science, philosophy, and is unique among literature, and is claimed to be presented by celestial beings. Among the topics, the Urantia Book discusses the origin and meaning of life, mankind's place in the universe, and the relationship between God and all people and other beings in the universe and the master universe, and the entire life of Jesus, which is in part four of the four-part book of the Urantia book. It's a huge amount of information that the Bible does not have, and it also underlines some of the things that the Bible does have. It's an amazing telling of what Jesus' life was like from the very beginning to the very end, and then well beyond. You feel as though you are there with him, with Jesus, throughout his life. It's a big book. It's 2,098 pages. I'm a longtime member of the Urantia Society of Greater New York, and that's made up of Urantia book readers from New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. I've been the past president, vice president, and outreach chair, among other positions, through the years, and I have had the privilege of giving several worship services when we have meetings. The Urantia book has been translated into 28 world languages. That is a fantastic number, and more are on the way. It's sold in better bookstores worldwide, and you may also read and listen to it on the internet. that's also a fantastic accomplishment that the Urantia movement has done. I'm going to give you two websites, and at some point, when you get a moment, take a look at what these websites are and what they're all about. They're tremendous. They're beautifully designed, and it will give you a lot of good information. So I'm going to go ahead. The first one is www.urantiabook.org. Again, urantiabook.org. The other website is www.urantia.nyc. I can't recommend these websites highly enough. They have so much great information. Okay, let's get right to it. Tonight, my featured guest on the program is a longtime reader and very active member of the Urantia Book family and a very dear, dear friend of mine. A very warm welcome to you, Doreen Hay.
Oh, thank you, Nick. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So happy you could join us for this. Looking forward very much to this podcast tonight. Now, you have been on my podcast before, so I'm not going to go deeply into your background information because we've already covered that in great detail. That was very, very interesting. And Hercules, if you'd be so kind, could you tell our listeners how they could hear past podcasts where Doreen Hayes has been on them? How do they do that?
They can go to Blog Talk Radio. And in the search, type in Hercules Invictus. And then there's a search for a specific program. So they can look at the title of the programs. And whenever they find the Urantia book with Nick Curto, they can click on the program to see who the guests are.
Excellent, excellent. I'm just going to just spell that out just in case. Blog Talk Radio is BLOGTALKRADIO.
Correct.
Thank you, Hercules. That's a great way to hear past podcasts, and Doreen is on them, so you can hear of her background. So, Doreen, let's get started. Now, there's a very wonderful story you were telling me about. Please share that with our listeners, if you will.
Oh, sure. Of course. Thank you. Yeah, I always think of life as a series of stories, and it's like your stories and other people's stories. Well, this is one where you would find God in action in a person's life. Now, I was at the Parliament of World Religions several years ago in Salt Lake City, Utah, and at our hotel, I met a man at breakfast. Since we were always the first ones there every morning, we talked, and he asked me, his name was Matthew, and he was in his 30s, a very tall, strapping, good-looking guy, and he asked me if I was interested in attending his workshop. Now, you have to understand at the Parliament, there must be 8,000 to 10,000 people, and workshops, probably over 50, maybe near 100. But it didn't matter which one you attend. They're all good. So I did there. You know, I went there, and it was fine. And then the next morning, I met him again for breakfast a few more days. And then he asked me to sit with him, and he said, would you like to hear my background? And I said, sure. He said when he was 5 years old, when his mother sent him out with her other children to steal food for his family, he was assigned to steal meat. And he said one day the police brought him home to his mother and told her that if he did it again, he would be taken away from her. Now, at that time, the Canadian government and the church sold the children from the reservations to families in Europe, the United States, and elsewhere. They made a considerable amount of money from this enterprise, he was put into over 33 foster homes where they beat, starved, sexually abused him, and locked him in a barrel for a week without food. Imagine you're 5 years old and there was no one to save you, to love you, to comfort you. So he continually ran away and he was caught. They put him in another foster home, and again, more and more abuse went over the years. Now, eventually, with all this trauma, you forget who you are. You don't even remember where you came from. It's like life is so traumatic that it becomes, you kind of separate yourself from it, and he did not remember where he was or who his family was, nothing. Anyway, during his teen years, he started confront certain issues about himself because he didn't know anything about himself, period. He tried to commit suicide. And at that time, he was sent to a mental institution. Well, when you try to commit suicide, you're really withdrawn from your life. And he never opened his mouth like a clam in a shell. He never spoke to the psychiatrist until about a year later when the doctor said something that triggered a response and he attacked the doctor, throwing him on the floor and beating him. Well, what happens in one of those institutions, the attendants rushed in, but the doctor told them to get out, for it was the first time he made a breakthrough with this guy. At some point in time, he was well enough, I guess, to be replaced, you know, to be placed with a family. The doctor knew people from his church, and he said this couple were really nice people and they would care for you because he wanted him to have a normal life. He wanted him to go to school. He was only a teenager. And so he said, not to worry, they would be kind, they would treat him well, they didn't have any other children, and so he agreed, and he did go. Well, at one point, you see, Matthew, where, you know, he had no connection to anything. He didn't know who he was, where he came from, if he had a family. Did he belong to anyone in this world, especially after all the trauma he had experienced? These were the questions that were on his mind, and he couldn't answer. And the doctor, no matter what he did, he couldn't retrieve anything. He was so young when he was displaced. So along the way, you know, he began to go to school. But even in school, he just didn't fit in. He said the other kids were black, they were white, they were yellow skin, but his skin was different. Who was he? He continued therapy, and the doctor said, guess what? He said, maybe you can go to the sweat lodge because I have some friends that run it. And maybe there, I don't know, there would be some benefit to you, and would you be interested in going? And he had no idea what it was, but he did agree to go. Now, the amazing thing that happened to him while he was alone in the lodge, a voice spoke to him, perhaps an angel, he thought. It startled him, but the spirit spoke so beautifully and told him he came from a reservation in Manitoba, Canada, from the Dakota tribe. Imagine, he was so taken aback. And he said that his name, the voice told him his name is Running Horse, and he had a destiny to fulfill. He was told first to find his family and to go back up to Canada, and he did find his family. Actually, he was living in Ohio at the time with his family. So he found, when he went home, he found that most of his siblings, I think they had about seven kids altogether, that they were dead from alcohol or drugs. He said, we are an addictive people, And now you could add gambling to the list because, you know, the Indians, they opened up all these casinos. So he said the spirit told him to go to all the schools and make a presentation and find all the children that were taken from their families and reunite them. And that's what he did as the years went by. He became a leader of many indigenous tribes. He rode by horseback from town to town in full costume with others, bringing awareness to the people throughout the state of Ohio. And I think he went in probably to Pennsylvania and others. And he did this every weekend. And then, you know, he made presentations in the schools and found the children that were also displaced. Well, apparently, as time went on, he said the spirit continued speaking with him and engaged him that from that time forward. He mentioned that eventually the Canadian government and the U.S. government changed their laws, and reparations were made to these people for what they had done, taking their children away. In Canada, the government and the Protestant church, and actually I think it was probably just all the Christian churches, did. They were in on the deal. They made a lot of money off these children. And the reparations was about $31 billion for removing the children, forcibly abducting them and putting them in homes and some kind of other, I guess, schools where they didn't treat them very well either. But when I went to the workshop, they talked about some of the children that were put into different homes. They treated them very nicely, and not everyone was abused. So there was conflicting stories, and it depended, like any other family. Sometimes people have heart, and sometimes they're cruel, and they do it for the money. So a lot of them were adopted as well in Europe and many other places in the world. Well, he talked about this. It was just like an amazing thing, because how could anybody, he didn't think I would believe him. How could anybody believe you're in a sweat lodge and you hear a voice and the spirit is talking to you, telling you who you are and where you came from and what your destiny is? But I understood, because I have studied this kind of thing for 40-something years, and besides, I had my own experiences. So I said, not to worry, you know. And he says, I hope you understand. I says, absolutely. And, you know, he had his wife and his son there. He was married to this beautiful blonde girl from Ohio, and he had a six-year-old boy. So I knew his life was transformed, I suppose, at that point. Now, when he shared his spiritual experience with me, he began to cry. It was so profound as it touched his soul. I too began to cry, for I could feel the love that God poured into him. He held my hand, and it was like just the energy went from his soul into mine. He was so transformed by the gift of grace as we held hands in silence with full understanding of his beautiful rebirth of his soul. I shall never forget him, nor how the Father works his love and sheds his light upon us to transform our lives into, I suppose, an amazing journey for each of us, if we are in tune or find that the spiritual family above is really concerned to give us the best that they can, if we are observant to the leading of the spirit. Because we're told that God, they call it the adjuster, but it's a fragment of God, and it's in every living being, every person of normal mind. And that spirit has a plan for each and every person's life. And if you follow the spirit, if you are in tune, if you open, what do they call it, rent the curtain or open the doorway between the two worlds, you will not just have an easy life, let's say, because you wouldn't grow from an easy life, but you have a plan that you could work with the spirit to lead you into growth and maturity and all the things that we're here to do. So it's funny because when we talked about these things, you know, they give us the purpose, of course, in the Arantra book. It describes the never-ending journey towards perfection. And it's very conceptual, the book. But they talk about the angels. There's a large section on angels. And the angels, they don't have material bodies. Of course, maybe you're aware of that. But they are definite and discrete beings. They are of spirit nature and origin. And they are invisible to us, but they perceive you as you are in the flesh, without the aid of transformers or translators. They intellectually understand the mode of moral life, and they share all of man's non-sensual emotions and sentiments. They appreciate and greatly enjoy our efforts in music, art, and real humor. So in his case, he was suicidal before Matthew became aware that kind of life was he living. And when he told me, it was so powerful for him to even tell me, and you could see this big guy was sitting in the hotel's breakfast room, and the tears are running down his face, and then, you know, it touched me so much. But how beautiful his life became. It was, to me, just absolutely amazing to know how the spirit works in our lives. Because I've had experiences myself, and I was suicidal at a young age and came from a very disturbed home. But of course, growing up in the streets of New York, it was wonderful on the streets, and you play with other kids. Nobody knows your business, and you don't know theirs. And life is at least preserved in a different way, where there was no discrimination, boys, girls, all ages. Everybody played together to make a team. So that helped me to develop myself, to feel part of the living, even though everything was dark inside my apartment. Now, I understand that I could say, let's put it this way, that because I've had my own leadings of the spirit, I certainly understood what Matthew went through. And he was very successful in the end, and I only saw him this one time and not again. But there's a connection you make between people. It's like you touch each other's heart and soul, and you realize, wait a minute, you know, I used to ask the questions, and like he did as well, why are we here? We look around us and we see the planet is so mean. People are just mean to each other, as my parents were anyway. And how? What's the point of just being here? What good life? There is no happiness. There's no love. There's nothing. Your life is empty. And that's why Matthew wanted to die. And he tried to commit suicide, and somebody found him. And, of course, it wasn't meant to be. There was a plan for his life. And actually, it unfolded beautifully after that, over years and years of therapy. So to give you, you know, just an understanding of how the spirit works in all our lives, because before you're born, remember, God knows everything. They know your DNA. They know your ancestry. They have to figure out how to work with each of the beings that they indwell. Well, that's not easy because you cannot interfere. After all, we have free will, so we make our own decisions. But in adversity is when you find there is something that is needed in your life. And for me, there was a void. there was no love in my life. I couldn't understand living, and I did try to commit suicide, but I never went all the way through with it. I tried to strangle myself, but it didn't work because I couldn't breathe, and I had to take the scarf off, and I laughed at it. But I actually, when I look back on it, I thought to myself, you know, I'm really thankful for the adversity early on, because if it wasn't for that, I would have never, never tried to find meaning and to find purpose in my life. You see, my parents were atheists, so I never knew about God, and I made him up in my mind. I thought to myself, wait a minute, maybe there's somebody out there in the sky that's listening to me. I was 5 years old, and I was left alone, and I was scared. And they left me alone from 11 o'clock in the morning, my parents, till 8:30 at night, imagine. And we didn't have television or telephone back then, and there was no toys, no games, there was nothing. So it was really deprived, and not only myself, but my two sisters as well. Had it worse. But anyway, the point being is that I look back and say, I have found a wonderful life after that. Little by little, it unfolded step by step. And being intuitive, you just have a sense of what to do, where to go, how to go. And my thinking started to change. And I ended up finding what I really needed. And as I got to be a teenager, and of course dating, and I went to work, I did join in school. They had a program where you worked 1 week and you went to school 1 week. It was a new program, and I loved it because we were so poor. I couldn't belong to cheerleaders in school or anything. I couldn't afford outfits. It was just ridiculous. So working was wonderful to me, and it defined me later on. It ended up helping me to know what I was capable of. Working with adults, it threw me into a world that I felt most comfortable because I could not identify with children. After all, school kids were in a different realm than I was. I was exposed to so much abuses and sexuality and all kinds of negative stuff, and that children shouldn't lose their childhood, but I did, and grew up very quickly, and had to mentor my sociopathic mother and father. Well, my father, he didn't bother with any of us. He didn't like females, and it was, you know, it was useless to talk to them. But it was interesting. I just will refer to one thing, that when he died, I found his little black book, and he wrote notes in it, and he was very smart, my father. He was very educated, read constantly, 5 books a week. And in the book, he had the same interest that I had. He was interested in also philosophy, spirituality, and he took all these notes. And I felt so terrible that he never discussed these things with me or any of us. I had no idea what he was about. Anyway, but one thing led me to the other. And I prayed to God. I gave him, I said, if you are real, because people talked about God, and when you're working, girls say, would you like to come to church with me? So I knew there was something that people believed in, you know, over the years. And what happens, it changes, I guess, the way I started to think, is he real? Who is the person I'm talking to every night? And crying myself to sleep and going with swollen eyes to work. I was so embarrassed. But actually, I made him a deal. I said, God, if you are real, then this is what I need to survive with. And I gave a list. I never asked for anything material. I asked for values. I asked for quality. I asked to find a husband someday that was so understanding, that came from a good home, that had wonderful, loving parents, so that if we had children, he would understand how to bring them up. And I just made a list and I said all these things. I said the qualities that I wanted. I just laid out a slate and let it go. And I said that was it, about 8 or 10 things. And that was it, and forgot about it and dated. And I had a good social life when I was a teenager and ran around a lot. Well, lo and behold, I don't know, these instincts, I guess, that we come into this world with, it's a knowing, it's that inner knowing. There's something that brings you to another person, those angels now that I mentioned. The Urantia book talks about many orders of angels. They work with us in many areas. And so we have guardian angels, we have angels of nations, angels of religion, angels of education. They're in every area, but they cannot interfere. But they work on the outside, like to bring people together. And so I did. I met my husband. He was, from the other side of the tracks. And he was so kind, and he had such a great reputation. I wasn't interested in getting married or anything, and I dated, and he was kind, and he was adventurous, and I was just a very pragmatic person. I always thought things out. I always thought of consequences when you do actions, but he wasn't like that. He was exciting, adventurous. He took chances. He would say, do you want to go for a cup of coffee? And I lived in Brooklyn. And I said, okay. And he would take me to Connecticut for a cup of coffee. And I just thought he was crazy. But he was so much fun, and I was happy to be with him. And I said, thank you, God. You did give me one of the things I asked for. And he came from a wonderful dad that was just, I guess that's where it just, when you're in an environment, the things that affect us in life, of course, are genetics, education, and, of course, our personalities and the families you grow up in, who are all unique. So, but that's like the model for the foundation for our lives. And there you go. So I did marry. He was in the military, you know, when he graduated. They had the draft at the time, but it wasn't wartime. So he used to come home with the army truck and pick me up at the house and everybody in the neighborhood. He didn't care. He just was a free spirit, and I loved him for that because I had just a freeing experience being with him. Anyway, and we ended up, we thought, we'll have 2 children and we'll have them early and then we'll travel the world. And that's what we did. And I married at 18. I had my son about 13 months later, then a daughter 2.5 years later, and we moved out of New York. And we moved up to the country, up in northern New Jersey in the woods. A state park, could you imagine? No cement sidewalks. I was up there with grass, and in the echoes of when I yelled, it echoed back to me because there was no people there. There was nothing. Anyway, it was a wonderful thing that I found my destiny. So you look at things in a different way when you understand the pattern for our lives. And the Urantia book talks about pattern. And as I told you about Matthew, this is how it unfolded for him. And I never saw him again, so I cannot follow up and tell you the rest of his history. But I know, of course, when he was in touch, he said, with the spirit that led him continually and talked to him, it opened up that communication from that higher recess in our mind where I suppose they, you know, where you could worship God or pray, and they call it the superconscious level of reality. And that's where things, I guess, are revealed to you if you can reach that state of consciousness. Well, apparently for him it was different than for me. I started to have a feeling that there was something in my area that I should go to another town, and maybe they had something that I was interested in, and that was spirituality. I wanted to know about God, and how, you know, all the reasons for life and everything like that. And I read a lot of books. I started to take out metaphysical books. They didn't have too much in the early 70s. But then I found when I went to another school, you know, another town, they had this dancing school. And I said, you know what? I told my daughter, I said, come on, let's join this dancing school. And maybe we'll find some people who will tell me what I'm looking for. Well, lo and behold, the dancing school had some people there, but nobody knew anything what I was looking for. But one day I opened the door, and right across the hall, about 4 feet from where I was standing, a sign went up, and it said, Institute of Spiritual Development. Well, I closed the door to the dancing school. I went into the institute, and wow, that was an education. That was the beginning. And when I was there, the first time, I didn't know a soul there, but I knew this is where I should be. And they put us together with whoever. I didn't know anyone, so they put us together and said, we want you to give each other a message. Well, what is that? What do you mean, give each other a message? I had no clue what they were talking about. But in the teachings, you see, when you open up that connection with that soul consciousness in the spirit realm, what happens? And you have to be sincere. Remember, if you're sincere, God will give you what you need. If you're just trying to test it or fooling around and playing and seeing what's out there, it doesn't work. But I had no idea about even if there was life after death. I had no understanding. I was never taught anything about religion. Well, I went in there and they said, oh, yeah, there is life to death. And then this woman would start talking, and she said, I'm going to give you a message. And she tells me, oh, some stuff, and I didn't believe it. And I said, oh, well, you know, but I can't make up a story. That'd be hypocritical. And how am I going to tell her? I don't know anything to tell her. I don't know her, and I'm not going to make it up. So I just closed my eyes, and I said, oh, God, I don't know what to do. And all of a sudden, the third eye opened up, and I saw two people. They were very tall. They had a certain dress. And they said to me one thing, Anne, that was her name, to call her aunt. That was it. And they disappeared, and I opened my eyes, and I thought, what a stupid message. So I said to her, that was your name, Anne? She says, yes. I said, I saw these two people, you know, and I described, she says, that's my dead Dutch parents. So she said, I said, well, they gave me this message. And I told her what they said. You know, they said to call your aunt. And she said, thank you. The next morning I'm at work, and she calls me and said, you have to come over and read for my sister. Oh, my God, I called my aunt, and she said that she had $20,000 waiting for me for my daughter to go to Harvard at that time. And she hadn't spoken to her for 10 years, but through the spirit, this is what came through. Well, that amazed me because I had no idea that I could do such things. And I just dismissed it after that and stayed many years there and learned. And I started to teach the Arantian teachings because they have classes at night. And I said, wow, I'm going to, you know, I hadn't read the whole book entirely, but there were a lot of sections that I thought, because it's a series of papers and you could talk about any topic. And it really does cover everything in existence. So it talks about morality and ethics. It talks about family life. It talks about life on a neighboring planet. It talks about the rest of the universe and the cosmos and how it's set up and where we're going to go, and that this life is just the first step in the process of a long destiny. Well, there was a lot, and I started to talk about it to other people. And over the years, it was fun. I found out that the people who ran this institute had read the Arantia books, because I said to them, you know, the guy's name was Jim, the one guy, and I said, and the other was from England. This one was from the United States. And I said, guess what? I found this book. You have to read it. It is amazing. And they said, what's the name? And I said to them, the Urantia book. Oh, we read it years ago. That's why the teachings that they had there was a lot of what the book had said, and they never told us where they got it from. So it was really, it was just, this is like a wonderful series of events that kept unfolding and unfolding in my life, every single thing. And then, of course, I did yoga and meditation. And meditation, wow, now that was something I had read about and I wanted to do because it said that, it reveals things to you in the universe and God and whatever. So I practiced, and I practiced for a long time, maybe a few months, and they give you a mantra and then the music and all these different things, and I could not, it wouldn't shut my mind down, and I couldn't do it. So one day I just lay down on the couch, and I said, God, why don't you just tell me about your nature, who you are, what you're like, and bingo, in seconds, again, my eye opened up for the second time, and there was this beautiful woman that smiled to me with a dot in the middle of her head. And that was it, and it disappeared. And from then on, it becomes habit-forming to meditate. And it took me on a journey, an amazing, amazing journey. It showed me my future life, what was going to happen. I even saw that my husband was going to die, but I didn't know it. You know, you see things, but it's very hard to interpret. And I saw him going off in a different direction and in a boat, and I went in a different. And I thought, how do I decipher that? What does that mean? Are we going to get divorced? I never thought he was going to die. And then he died, and I understood. They showed me that I was never going to go back. My husband's father's family came from East Germany. And, there were so many things happened in the interim, but too little time to talk about. But we went over there. He took us over there when we had somebody come to work for us that came from, that was when the communists were in East Germany, remember. This guy was in West Germany. He said to my father-in-law, that never went home since the 20s when he left home, he said, I'll take you back to find your family if you want to go. And they did. And he took us every year after that to meet them. And it was the funniest thing because when he got to his town, in the East Zone, in the Russians, they were crazy. I mean, it was really crazy there at the time. They watched you, everything you did, every place you went. They arrested my husband about three times because he just stopped the car on the side of the road, and you're not allowed without permission. Everything was just insane, total control. Anyway, we went there, and the day my father-in-law went to the police station, his father was a builder and an architect and built all, you know, the towns and factories. So he went to the police station that his father built in his town that he was born in, and he said, I'm looking for my Shvestas, his sisters. And, of course, he told them their name, and he said, yeah, they're right there in the house that they never moved from because, you see, under the communists, you don't own anything. You can't move. Everybody stays in the same place, has the same job forever. So he went there, and they were having...
I hate to interrupt, but we have less than a minute left.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize that. But it was a wonderful experience. Finding, you know, this family and finding all the history and exposing my children to learn all this stuff about what it's like. And I was shown it in a vision before I went there and said, you're never going to go back again. In the vision, the doors closed on the plane, on the train, on the bus. And what happened right after that, the wall came down, and they were showing me I was never to return. So anyway, that's just part of the adventures of a person's life that behold all of us unique. But thank you. Thank you very much for allowing me to continue speaking.
Thank
Doreen,
you very much.
What wonderful stories you have. It was just fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing those beautiful, inspiring stories. You really absolutely blew me away, and I'm sure our listeners feel the same way. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Much love to you always, and I would love to have you back in the new year. This is Nick Curto presenting the Urantia Book, wishing you all an enlightened journey. And till next time, please explore the deep wisdom and limitless love contained in the Urantia Book. Stay safe and be very, very kind to one another. Goodbye for now. Much love to all our listeners out there and to everyone. Take good care. Good night.
Thank you, Nick. Bye-bye.